So reading from chapter 18 on the character of one in ecstatic love. Rupa Goswami next describes the characteristics of a person who has actually developed his ecstatic love for Krishna. The characteristics are as follows. Notice here, he makes the point, who has actually developed. So if these are there, then you know that's there. One, he is always anxious to utilize his time in devotional service of the Lord. He does not like to be idle. He wants service always, 24 hours a day, without deviation. Two, he is always reserved and perseverant. Three, he is always detached from all material attraction. Four, he does not long for any material respect in return for his activities. Five, he is always certain that Krishna will bestow his mercy upon him. Six, he is always very eager to serve the Lord faithfully. Seven, he is very much attached to the chanting of the holy names of the Lord. Eight, he is always eager to describe the transcendental qualities of the Lord. Nine, he is very pleased to live in a place where the Lord's pastimes are performed, namely Mathura, Vrindavan, or Dwaraka. So these characteristics are characteristics that we're trying to develop. That means we're working to develop. If one understands the goal, then one works towards that before that stage, right? If you have a goal, then you're always working to get to that. So these points here, it's not that, okay, when we come to the platform of ecstatic love, we'll think about these. These are ones that we're trying to develop all along, we find. These same things are there. They're still recommended. Right? One is always doing service to the Lord. Like that, we see that comes in service, but also in the aspect of the worshiping the deity. Is always reserved and perseverant, properly behaved, detached from the material attraction. Doesn't require any material respect. Always expecting the Lord to bestow his mercy upon him. Eager to serve the Lord faithfully. He's attached to the chanting of the holy name, describing the qualities. Describe or hear these qualities, so hearing from the Srimad Bhagavatam, and always eager to live in a place where the Lord is in his dham. So we see that there are natural points on these five main items of devotional service that Rupa Goswami has described previously. But now we see that there's certain active qualities that are there. It means one should aspire to always chant, always be with devotees. But now we see that these qualities then very much reflect the person who does have these interests or who is engaged like this. So then the first one is utilization of time. An unalloyed devotee who has developed ecstatic love for Krishna is always engaging his words and reciting prayers to the Lord. Within the mind, he is always thinking of Krishna. And with his body, he either offers obeisances by bowing down before the deity or engages in some other service. During these ecstatic activities, he sometimes shed tears. In this way, his whole life is engaged in the service of the Lord, with not a moment wasted on any other engagement. Perseverance. When a person is undisturbed, even in the presence of various causes of disturbance, he is called reserved and perseverant. An example of this perseverance and reservation is found in the behavior of King Parikshit, as described in the first canto, 19th chapter, verse 15 of Srimad Bhagavatam. The king says there to all the sages present before him at the time of his death, "My dear Brahmanas, you should always accept me as your surrendered servant. I have come to the bank of the Ganges just to devote my heart and soul unto the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. So please bless me, that Mother Ganges may also be pleased with me. Let the curse of the Brahman's son fall upon me. I do not mind. I only request that at the very last moment of my life, all of you will kindly chant the holy name of Vishnu, so that I may realize his transcendental qualities." This example of Maharaj Parikshit's behavior, his remaining patient even in the last point of his life, his undisturbed condition of mind, is an example of reservation. This is one of the characteristics of a devotee who has developed ecstatic love for Krishna. So here the perseverance we see is when there is cause for being disturbed and one is not. that should always be kept in mind. Otherwise, the tendency is to think that because the system of Krishna consciousness is so perfect, then also all material situations will also be perfect. And so, you know, one will always be happy. But here it's pointing out that we are very situated nicely in Krishna consciousness and remembering the Lord, depending upon the Lord, even in situations where they are not seemingly so materially favorable. Like here, Maharaj Parikshit has been cursed to die, and, you know, within a few days, he's given up his kingdom, given up everything. So it doesn't look materially overly favorable, right? But it is perfectly favorable because he's perseverant. He is always surrendered to the Lord. So he's not disturbed that there's some disturbing situation. And he's always trying to remember the Lord. So this is a very good example that in the material world, things may not go nicely, even for the devotee. But in that situation, he will remember the Lord. Detachment. The senses are always desiring sense enjoyment. But when a devotee develops transcendental love for Krishna, his senses are no longer attracted by material desires. This state of mind is called detachment. There is a nice example of this detachment in connection with the character of King Bharata. In the 5th canto, 14th chapter, verse 43 of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated, Emperor Bharata was so attracted by the beauty of the lotus feet of Krishna that even in his youthful life, he gave up all kinds of attachments to family, children, friends, kingdom, etc., as though they were untouchable stools. Emperor Bharata provides a typical example of detachment. He had everything enjoyable in the material world, but he left it. This means that detachment does not mean artificially keeping oneself aloof and apart from the allurements of attachment. Even in the presence of such allurements, if one can remain unattracted by material attachments, he is called detached. In the beginning, of course, a neophyte devotee must try to keep himself apart from all kinds of alluring attachments. But the real position of a mature devotee is that even in the presence of all allurements, he is not at all attracted. This is the actual criterion of detachment. So one, in the beginning, because the senses are accustomed to, you know, being engaged in the sense objects, so we try to separate these senses and the sense objects in the beginning, so that we can actually identify the difference between the two. That there is a mind, it has its desires, there's material elements, we are attached to them. We try to engage the senses in those sense objects. So there must be some period of time where there is separation of these so that we can identify them all very clearly. And we can see that the senses being detached from the sense objects, one can be satisfied. Right? There is a satisfaction there is a happiness there. And we see that the simplicity of life by doing that. So in the beginning, that is always recommended. Then if one finds that there is still some attachment there, one may then engage the senses in the sense objects, you know, through the Grihastha Ashram, through various situations. Then we see that one is engaged, but one has already identified what is the standard. Right? One has to already identify the standard, otherwise then one doesn't know what a standard is. One won't know how to behave. Then, with time, we find that even in the situation where the senses and the sense objects are in proximity to each other, one does not have the attraction. Then that is detachment. Right? So at that time, then these senses and sense objects, these can be completely left. Like Maharaj Bharata, he is in with family, he has his wealth, he has his position, he is the emperor of the world. But then he finds that he is detached even in that situation. So then it's the ideal situation to leave those things and go about his other duties. And others who are very interested to work with these elements, they can take them up. So after instructing his sons, then he left the kingdom. So in the beginning, so the point here is that in the beginning we have to separate the senses from the sense objects. But at the end, we find that even if they are together, there's no attraction. So therefore there's no engagement. So in either situation, then the senses not being engaged with the sense objects and the mind not being attached to the objects of the senses, this is what we're trying to gain. So in the beginning, that's by practice, and at the end, by mature realization. Yes.
In the first thing it says that.
In the first?
The fourth point.
In the fourth point. Fourth point does not long for any material respect. That's coming up. That's the next point.
Does he want spiritual respect?
No, I'm saying it's the next point that we're going to read. See, what happens is Rupa Goswami first gives you an outline so that you know what he's going to talk about. You see them all together, you can concentrate on them and get an understanding of what are the points. Then he goes and expands and talks on each point. Just like the 64 items of devotional service in Sadhana Bhakti, he puts them all in one chapter. Then after that, then he spends another 8-9 chapters describing them. Right? So what he's done here is he's opened and he's put these 9 points of symptoms of one in ecstatic love. And now he's going through. So we just read utilization of time, perseverance, and detachment. So we dealt with the first three. Right? So now we're going to deal with the fourth one. Okay? Pridelessness. When a devotee, in spite of possessing all qualities of pure realization, is not proud of his position, he is called prideless. In the Padma Purana, it is stated that King Bhagirath was the emperor above all other kings, yet he developed such a static love for Krishna that he became a mendicant and went out begging even to the homes of his political enemies and untouchables. He was so humble that he respectfully bowed down before them. There are many similar instances in the history of India. Even very recently, about 200 years ago or less, one big landlord known as Lal Babu, the Calcutta landholder, became a Vaishnav and lived in Vrindavan. He also begged from door to door, even at the homes of his political enemies. Begging involves being ready to be insulted by persons to whose home one has come. That is natural, but one has to tolerate such insults for the sake of Krishna. The devotee of Krishna can accept any position in the service of Krishna. Right? So does that answer your question? On this point or on the next point?
But we should not accept, he says he's going for begging, so we should not accept grace from somebody who is kind. So when he's going for begging,
yes. We don't accept, generally, you know, foodstuffs from those who are not devotees or those who are, you know, materialistic. When one is within the realm of sadhana. But when one comes to the Brahma-Bhuta stage, one is beyond that. So now we see it's a matter of humility. They can take from anywhere. But we see here he's also offering obeisances to them. Because someone also on this platform sees all others as devotees. And he doesn't see himself as a devotee. So in his mind, all these people are higher than him. Right? For the Madhyama, he sees those higher than him, equal to him, lower than him, and the innocent. Right? And he sees those who are inimical. Right? So depending upon the situation, the innocent may or may not take things from. And those who are inimical, definitely he doesn't take anything from them. Because in the stage of sadhana, they can have an effect on one's consciousness. But in this stage of, once one comes to ecstatic love, then they don't necessarily disturb. Right? So if one is setting example for others, then one may not go to these places. If one is not setting example for others, because it's on that platform, one does not have to. Right? One's not required to follow the rules. So then they may go anywhere. Right? So it doesn't disturb them. Great hope. The strong conviction that one will certainly receive the favor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is called in Sanskrit Ashabandha. Ashabandha means to continue to think, because I am trying my best to follow the routine principles of devotional service, I am sure that I will go back to Godhead, back to home. In this connection, one prayer of Rupa Goswami is sufficient to exemplify this hopefulness. He says, I have no love for Krishna, nor for the causes of developing love of Krishna, namely hearing and chanting, and the process of bhakti yoga by which one is always thinking of Krishna and fixing his lotus feet in the heart is also lacking in me. As far as philosophical knowledge or pious works are concerned, I don't see any opportunity for me to execute such activities. But above all, I am not even born in a nice family. Therefore, I must simply pray to you, Gopi Janavallabha, Krishna, the maintainer and beloved of the gopis. I simply wish and hope that some way or another I may be able to approach your lotus feet. And this hope is giving me pain, because I think myself quite incompetent to approach that transcendental goal of life. The purport is that under this heading of Ashabandha, one should continue to hope against hope that some way or another he will be able to approach the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. So in every situation, we're always hoping that even though we're not qualified, since we're trying and we're working under the directions of the acharyas, that therefore then Krishna will, one is wishing and hoping that some way or another one will get the Lord's mercy. This is very important. One never thinks that I'm so unqualified, so therefore I give up devotional service, because the soul, my nature, is servant of Krishna. So it's only an illusion that the soul is in. The soul is covered by this illusion. So we may think I'm so covered, but the point is the soul has its nature as eternal servant of Krishna. So then there's no, how do you say, one knows it's the natural position. One may not see that there is much hope for it, but one still hopes for it anyway. Right? Hope against hope, that this blessing will then come to the devotee. Eagerness for achieving the desired success. When one is sufficiently eager to achieve success in devotional service, that eagerness is called samutkanta. This means complete eagerness. Actually, this eagerness is the price for achieving success in Krishna consciousness. Everything has some value, and one has to pay the value before obtaining or possessing it. It is stated in the Vedic literature that to purchase the most valuable thing, Krishna consciousness, one has to develop intense eagerness for achieving success. This intense eagerness is very nicely expressed by Bilva Mangal Thakur in his book Krishna Karinamrita. He says, I'm eagerly awaiting to see that boy of Vrindavan, whose bodily beauty is captivating the whole universe, whose eyes are always bounded by black eyebrows and expanded like lotus petals, and who is always eagerly glancing over his devotees and therefore moving slightly here and there. His eyes are always moist, his lips are colored like copper, and through those lips there comes a sound vibration which drives one madder than a mad elephant. I want so much to see him at Vrindavan. So this wanting devotional service, as was mentioned before in the previous chapters on spontaneous devotional service, that devotional service comes from desiring devotional service. So the more we desire it, that is the price. The price is that we want devotional service. We want to be able to please Krishna in devotional service. So that eagerness must be there. next. Attachment to chanting the holy names of the Lord. In the same Krishna Karinamrita, there is another statement about the chanting of Radharani. It is said by one of the associates of Radharani, O Lord Govinda, the girl who is the daughter of King Vrishabhanu is now shedding tears and she is anxiously chanting your holy name, Krishna, Krishna. Yes. Eagerness to describe the Lord's transcendental qualities. Attachment for chanting the glories of the Lord is also expressed in the Krishna Karinamrita as follows. What shall I do for Krishna, who is pleasing beyond all pleasurable conceptions, and who is naughtier than all restless boys? The idea of Krishna's beautiful activities is attracting my heart, and I do not know what I can do. Attraction for living in a place where Krishna has his pastimes. So we see that the very main thing here is always chanting the Lord's name, remembering the Lord, and always describing his qualities. This is the main absorption, this is the main attraction. So we always have to keep this in mind. This is actually what we're trying to develop. All other things are there to spread the chanting of the holy name, but while doing that, we're engaging our conditioned nature in the Lord's service. So we should never think that that is the simply to do that activity. That itself is only what we need to do. But our goal is to develop love for Krishna and to always be absorbed in hearing his name, form, qualities, pastimes. That always must be kept in the forefront. These other aspects are there to assist in this, to help purify us, to help engage us, because service to the Lord, then whatever it may be, then is purifying and brings us closer to the Lord. Then by that we become more and more attached to the Lord. We have to remember we are serving the Lord. Otherwise, there's that story heard that Srila Prabhupada tells about the devotee in Jagannath Puri who used to bring water for Lord Jagannath. So then he used to go every day, and he was so busy bringing water, he never went to visit Lord Jagannath. And then at the end of his life, he was just worried, well, who's going to bring the water for Jagannath? He never even thought about Jagannath. So he's absorbed in the service, but it's recommended that one remember who one is serving. You know, so if the opportunity is there, you go visit Jagannath. One remembers Jagannath like this. So that aspect is there, is that the service is because it's service to Krishna. The service is wonderful because it's to Krishna. So we want to please Krishna by rendering service. But we also want to see that we develop our love for Krishna. Does that make any sense? Attraction for living in a place where Krishna has his pastimes. In the book Padyavali by Rupa Goswami, there's the following statement about Vrindavan. In this place, the son of Maharaj Nanda used to live with his father, who was king of all cowherd men. In this place, Lord Krishna broke the cart in which the Shakatasura demon was concealed. At this place, Damodar, who cut the knot of our material existence, was tied up by his mother, Jashoda. A pure devotee of Lord Krishna resides in the district of Mathura, or Vrindavan, and visits all the places where Krishna's pastimes are performed. At these sacred places, Krishna displayed his childhood activities with the cowherd boys and mother Jashoda. The system of circumambulating all these places is still current among devotees of Lord Krishna, and those coming to Mathura and Vrindavan always feel transcendental pleasure. Actually, if someone goes to Vrindavan, you will immediately feel separation from Krishna, who performed such nice activities when he was present there. Excuse me. Such attraction for remembering Krishna's pastimes is also known as attachment for Krishna. There are impersonal philosophers and mystics, however, who by a show of devotional service want ultimately to merge into the existence of the Supreme Lord. They sometimes try to imitate a pure devotee's sentiment for visiting the holy places where Krishna had his pastimes, but they simply have a view for salvation, so their activities cannot be considered attachment. It is said by Rupa Goswami that the attachment exhibited by pure devotees for Krishna cannot possibly be perfected in the hearts of fruitive workers, karmis, or mental speculators, because such attachments in pure Krishna consciousness is very rare and not possible to achieve even for many liberated persons. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, liberation from material contamination is the stage at which devotional service can be achieved. For a person who simply wants to have liberation and to merge into the impersonal Brahma Jyoti, attachment to Krishna is not possible to acquire. This attachment is very confidentially kept by Krishna and is bestowed only upon pure devotees. Even ordinary devotees cannot have such pure attachment for Krishna. Therefore, how is it possible for success to be achieved by persons whose hearts are contaminated by the actions and reactions of fruitive activities and who are entangled by various types of mental speculation? So this platform of the Brahma-Bhuta platform, when that's achieved, that's the platform of liberation, then devotional service then is can be achieved. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, liberation from material contamination is the stage at which devotional service can be achieved. So that's the time when one can actually grasp it. Because until one's given up the material nature, one can't take fully Krishna consciousness. That means there'll be some mix. That's why it's called the Misra Bhakti. That there's some mix. Mix of karma, mix of jnana, mix of yoga. Like this, there'll be some mix there. But when it becomes, one comes to that liberated platform, then one can actually gain devotional service that can be achieved. So the point is that those who are non-devotees, there's no question of them achieving it. Because even the devotees who are not on the liberated platform, then they're not achieving pure, unalloyed devotional service. There are many so-called devotees who artificially think of Krishna's pastimes known as Astakaliya Lila. Sometimes one may artificially imitate these, pretending that Krishna is talking with him in the form of a boy, or else one may pretend that Radharani and Krishna both have come to him and are talking with him. Such characteristics are sometimes exhibited by the impersonalist class of men, and they may captivate some innocent persons who have no knowledge in the science of devotional service. However, as soon as an experienced devotee sees all of these caricatures, he can immediately evaluate such rascaldom. If such a pretender is sometimes seen possessing imitative attachment to Krishna, that will not be accepted as real attachment. It may be said, however, that such attachment gives the pretender hope that he may eventually rise unto the actual platform of pure devotional service. This imitative attachment can be divided into two headings, namely shadow attachment and para, transcendental attachment. If someone without undergoing the regulated principles of devotional service, or without being guided by a bona fide spiritual master, shows such imitative attachment, this is called shadow attachment. Sometimes it is found that a person actually attached to material enjoyment or salvation has the good fortune to associate with pure devotees. While they are engaged in chanting the holy name of the Lord, by the good grace of the Lord, one may also cooperate and join in the chanting. At that time, simply by the association of such pure devotees, the moon-like rays from their hearts reflect on him, and the influence of the pure devotees, he may show some likeness of attachment caused by inquisitiveness. But this is very flickering. And if by the manifestation of such shadow attachment, one feels the disappearance of all material pangs, then it is called para attachment. Such shadow attachment, or para attachment, can develop if one associates with a pure devotee or visits holy places like Vrindavan or Mathura. And if an ordinary man develops such attachment for Krishna and fortunately performs devotional activities in the association of pure devotees, he can also rise to the platform of pure devotional service. The conclusion is that transcendental attachment is so powerful that if such attachment is seen manifesting even in some common man by the association of pure devotee, it can bring one to the perfectional stage. But such attachment for Krishna cannot be invoked in a person without his being sufficiently blessed by the association of pure devotees. As attachment can be invoked by the association of pure devotees, so attachment can also be extinguished by offenses committed at the lotus feet of pure devotees. To be more clear, by the association of pure devotees, attachment for Krishna can be aroused. But if one commits offenses at the lotus feet of a devotee, one's shadow attachment or para attachment can be extinguished. This extinguishing is like the waning of the full moon, which gradually decreases and at last becomes dark. One should therefore be very careful while associating with pure devotees to guard against committing an offense at the lotus feet. So this by association with devotees while they perform service, then that in itself can enliven one, and one starts to reflect their qualities of attachment to the Lord. So if those attachments are there, and then they go away very easily because of one's attachment to karma and jnana, then that is what's mentioned here is the shadow attachment. But if we find that by that gaining that reflection of those qualities, then we find the material, the difficulties, the pangs of the material world go away, that's called the para attachment. It actually has a transcendental aspect to it. So if one is associating with the devotees following the regulative principles, then when this para attachment then may be developed, and that may gradually then bring one to that platform of actual pure attachment, or this attachment in ecstatic love. But the important thing is the following the regulative principles under the direction of the spiritual master and the association of advanced devotees. Transcendental attachment, either shadow or para, can be nullified by different degrees of offenses at the lotus feet of pure devotees. If the offense is very serious, then one's attachment becomes almost nil. And if the offense is not very serious, one's attachment can become second class or third class. If someone becomes attached to the principles of salvation, emerging into the existence of the Brahma-jyoti, his ecstasies gradually diminish into shadow and para attachment, or else transform into the principles of ahangraho-pasana. This ahangraho-pasana describes a living entity when he begins spiritual realization by identifying himself with the Supreme Lord. This state of self-realization is technically known as monism. The monist thinks himself one with the Supreme Lord. Thus, because he does not differentiate between himself and the Supreme Lord, it is his view that by worshipping himself, he is worshipping the Supreme Whole. Sometimes it is found that a neophyte is taking part in chanting and dancing very enthusiastically. But within himself, he is under the impression that he has become one with the Supreme Whole. This conception of monism is completely different from pure transcendental devotional service. If, however, it is seen that a person has developed a high standard of devotion without having undergone even the regulative principles, it is to be understood that his status of devotional service was achieved in a former life. For some reason or another, it had been temporarily stopped, most probably by an offense committed at the lotus feet of a devotee. Now, with a good second chance, it has again begun to develop. The conclusion is that steady progress in devotional service can be attained only in the association of pure devotees. So this is very important, this aspect of being careful in the association of devotees, keeping the association of devotees that are more advanced, and being careful not to offend them. Because otherwise, by that offense, then devotional taste and devotional service can be diminished or lost. It says it's taken down to practically nil. So one should always be very careful of that. Therefore, the principle of always trying to be humble is very important. This pridelessness that was described before. One may have good qualities, one may have so much good fortune, but one is humble. And then by that humility, then one very easily crosses over all the difficulties of spiritual life. Because generally, offenses come due to pride, either in our own opinion, or we think that we are better, or we have some, you know, we have some standards, we don't know how to apply them, and we'll say someone else is not up to the standard. Like this, we may create some difficulty for ourselves. So here the conclusion is by following the regulative principles in the association of devotees, then we will advance very nicely. And association of devotees is the most important. Because as it points out, if someone we find very quickly becomes advanced, it's understood that they performed devotional service in a previous life but did not perfect it. So now in this life they are taking up from an advanced position. If someone can gradually advance his status in devotional service, this is understood to be due to the causeless mercy of Krishna himself. If a person is completely detached from material enjoyment and has developed pure ecstatic devotion, even if he is sometimes accidentally found not living up to the standard of devotional service, one should not be envious of him. It is confirmed also in Bhagavad Gita that a devotee who has unflinching faith in and devotion to the Lord, even if sometimes found to be accidentally deviated from pure devotional characteristics, should still be counted among the pure. Unflinching faith in devotional service in Lord Krishna and in the spiritual master makes one highly elevated in the activities of devotional service. In the Nrsimha Purana it is said, if a person has completely engaged his mind, body, and activities in the service of the Supreme Godhead, but externally he is found to be engaged in some abominable activities, these abominable activities will surely be very quickly vanquished by the influence of his staunch devotional force. The example is given that on the full moon there are some spots which may appear to be pockmarks. Still, the illumination spread by the full moon cannot be checked. Similarly, a little fault in the midst of volumes of devotional service is not at all to be considered as a fault. Attachment for Krishna is transcendental bliss. Amid unlimited volumes of transcendental bliss, a spot of some material defect cannot act in any way. Excuse me. Then as one is advanced in devotional service, advancing, especially if they have great firm faith in Krishna, in the spiritual master, in the devotional process, we find that there may be some activities that are not perfectly in line with devotional service, but they are very nicely engaged in devotional service. Then it's understood that very quickly these things will go away by that power of devotional service. This is the point that Krishna is making. Someone has that faith in devotional service, but they may not have the perfect, always manifest the perfect qualities of devotional service. They're still to be counted as saintly. Because very quickly these will go away. Attachment to Krishna is very special. And the material contamination cannot overpower, is not more powerful than that if one is fixed nicely in devotional service. So one should be very careful in this. Otherwise, if one has done so much devotional service and one finds some fault, one cannot write off all that devotional service. Otherwise, one is saying that some amount of material activities, which may not be very good at all, the word used here is abominable. So they're not just saying, you know, they picked their nose or something. You know, then that, if we say that that can write off volumes of, or years and years of dedicated devotional service, that means we ourselves don't have faith in devotional service. We think material activities are more powerful. Confirmed by two tick-tickies. Yes, on opposite sides of the room. Therefore we see that these two shlokas in the Gita, this Apichet Sura Racharo, where it describes even someone who may fall from the standard, Krishna considers him saintly. And then the next verse it says, and very quickly he will become righteous. So now if Krishna already considers him saintly, why would he say very quickly he becomes righteous? It's contradictory. He's already saintly, he's saintly. He doesn't very quickly become righteous. Right? Becoming righteous means that they will become saintly. So then once this point was being discussed, I think by Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, and Yamaraj, down I think on Yamaraj's planet. So they were trying to discuss why this is said here, because Krishna has already said they're saintly, so why in the next verse he said he becomes saintly? So then they were discussing it for a long time and not coming to, you know, a conclusion that they felt satisfied with. So at the time, while they were discussing, they saw Bhaktivinoda Thakur walking by in the space chanting his japa. He went out for a japa walk. And he happened to just be walking by the neighborhood. So then Lord Shiva saw him, and then he told the others, he said, well, there's a Vaishnav. We can call him. He can definitely tell us what the meaning of these verses are. So then they called Bhaktivinoda Thakur over. He came and sat in this assembly. And then they asked him this question, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, you know, very simply, this means the first verse is talking about the devotee who has that, like here, that faith in devotional service in the spiritual master. But he may not be, he may have some difficulty in his service. The second verse, and so he is considered saintly still. The second verse is about another devotee who is observing that first devotee. That second devotee, also like the Lord considers that he's saintly, that second devotee will very quickly come to the righteous platform, and he will become also very advanced. So it's talking about the devotee and the devotee observing that devotee. So we see that this point comes out as being always said from the person who's viewing. You have the person, and then you have the person viewing that person. Like that. Because if Krishna considers him saintly, and we say he's a nonsense, then what is our position? So Krishna accepts him as saintly, therefore we have to accept. That doesn't mean that whatever is the improper behavior, we say, oh, now this is bona fide, and then we follow that. That it has to be according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. But it's understood that the power of their devotional service will overcome these activities. So then we ourselves have to have faith in the order of Guru, Krishna, and the Vaishnavas, in the Shastra, that this is more powerful. And so the engagement in devotional service is the cure for anything. If there are some difficulties, only by more engagement will that be corrected. But if we think that someone is not doing something rightly, remove him from devotional activities, then he'll be purified. This is a total misunderstanding of devotional service. Devotional service only can purify. No material activity can purify. As basically the whole sixth canto is describing this point. Is that Pariket Maharaj asks this to Sukadeva Goswami after he describes the hellish planets. That in the hellish planets, people have done something wrong, they're going there and being punished, but we know that it doesn't actually get rid of the desires in the heart. So again, they will do these activities. So then, what is the use of this prayaschitta? So then Sukadeva Goswami explains that that's correct. There is no real use. It must be there for the position of discipline, but it's understood that only devotional service can get rid of the desires in the heart and actually elevate one to the transcendental platform. But otherwise, material prayaschitta can't purify the heart. It can't remove material desire. It doesn't have the power. Only devotional activities, according to the regulative principles, those can purify the heart. Right? Those actually can purify. Any questions, huh? Yes.
Question. Is that, do you want to understand each other? You said
Mataji was not able to quite fully understand this point that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was making. It means there's two verses. One is said that even though one may perform all kinds of activities for the devotee, then Krishna considers him, you know, still saintly because he is rightly situated. Right? He said he's rightly situated, he is saintly. The next verse says that he will very soon become righteous. Right? So then it seemed contradictory to Brahma and Shiva and Yamaraj, because these are the persons that are always dealing with. Yamaraj is the one that deals with dharma for everybody and establishes it. Brahma is the one who's first established that. Manu Samhita is the words of Lord Brahma, the teachings of Brahma as he has heard them from Krishna. You know, and Lord Shiva, then he is a great authority on all these things, one of the Mahadevas. So they're always interested in what is actual dharma. So they're just trying to understand what this means. So then Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining that the first verse is describing the devotee who may have some difficulty in his devotional service. The second verse is describing a different devotee who may be observing the first devotee. And if he doesn't criticize him and offend him, but he understands the power of devotional service, and if he continues to do devotional service, and has that faith in devotional service, that will purify the first devotee, that second devotee very quickly becomes righteous. What is the fault? The fault of the second devotee is no fault as long as he has faith in devotional service. But if he sees some fault in the first devotee and just says, this person's not a devotee, throw him out, then he has no faith in devotional service. He can't claim himself to be very advanced. Right? Because he has faith in devotional service and knows that the only thing that can purify the first devotee is the continued performance of devotional service. And that devotee has done so much devotional service, and that is a credit to him that won't be lost. Right? Some small amount of material activity will not, one can't lose the credit of devotional service. It may slow down one's devotional service, but one knows that if he continues devotional activities, he will all these things will go away. You know, that's what the point is being here. If a person has completely engaged his mind, body, and activities in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but externally he is found to be engaged in some abominable activities, these abominable activities will surely be very quickly vanquished by the influence of a staunch devotional force. It is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita that a devotee who has unflinching faith in and devotion to the Lord, even if sometimes found to be accidentally deviated from pure devotional characteristics, should still be counted among the pure. Unflinching faith in devotional service in Lord Krishna and in the spiritual master makes one highly elevated in the activities of devotional service. Just that makes one elevated. Because the point is the difference between the beginning stage of devotional service, which we call Shraddha, and what we call Prema at the end, is the amount of Shraddha that's there. Right? Someone on the platform of Shraddha means they've gotten some little bit of Shraddha in devotional service. When that increases, one wants to associate with those who have that faith. Then one takes up sadhusanga. When that shraddha increases more, then one takes up seriously the devotional activities, the regulated devotional activities. That's bhajana kriya. When that is more, one then tries to give up attachment to the material world because one has faith in the spiritual. Otherwise, up to that point, there still may be so much attachment to the material activities because one has faith in them. But when the faith becomes more in Krishna, one gives up that faith. Right? Then one becomes fixed in devotional service because of that faith is stronger and that has removed one's material attachments. Faith is more, then one sees the name and Krishna's non-difference. And then one gains a taste for this. one's faith in Krishna is more, we see Krishna as a person, all his wonderful qualities, his form, his activities like this, then one becomes attached to Krishna. That faith becomes more than one that develops into a static love. It becomes more, becomes prema. So it's all based on faith. So if faith is very minimal in somebody, they're actually not very advanced. So faith is the main thing that one is looking for. So one may have someone who's very new and someone who's been in the movement for many years. The faith in the new person may be greater. Of course, as Prabhupada points out, it may be coming from last life because they performed the devotional activities, but it was stopped due to some offense. Like that. But if the faith is not very great, then that is really where the advancement is counted. Because that's what's going on in the whole process. The faith is just increasing up to the point of prema. Right? The cowherd boys, yeah, total 100% faith in Krishna. Therefore, they just look at Krishna's face and laugh and walk into the mouth of the Yagasura because they know he'll protect them. They're not at all worried. You know, they've just watched him kill Bakasura and all these other asuras, so he'll surely kill this one also. So it's just complete faith. Right? So faith is very important. So for the first devotee, he has faith in devotional service, therefore he's advanced, even though sometimes there may be some disturbances in his service. And the second devotee, if he has faith, knows that only by devotional service is that first devotee going to be elevated. So seeing the faith of that first devotee, seeing them engage in devotional service, they know that these abominable activities will go away only by this process, no other process. We see Prabhupada followed this very strictly. Someone would be engaged in activity, fall down, he put them back in that same activity because that activity was akin to their nature. And therefore, by performing activities according to their nature, they could be fully absorbed in Krishna's service. So Prabhupada had full faith that if they perform service to Krishna, according to how they can be fully absorbed, like you have someone who's a GBC, if you have him washing pots, it's not going to be a full absorption for him. You may do it for a day or two, but it will not fully engage his ability. So we'd see Prabhupada would take GBC that would fall, put him back as GBC. Because he knew this is what's going to purify him. Because only devotional service, not something else. Right? But we see that in the general, you know, the people's concept, then is that some material punishment, that's going to purify. Because they have faith in prayaschitta. But we know their only real prayaschitta is devotional service. But of course we would see in this, Prabhupada would give his association, he would preach to the person, he would try to cultivate the proper understanding, all these things he would try to do. It wasn't that you just take them and stick them back in and don't do anything. It means, because it says here, by the association of devotees. So if someone has difficulty in devotional service, it can only be cured by full devotional service in the association of advanced devotees. So if we really want to cure any problem with devotees that we may see, that advanced devotees aren't so advanced, it can only be cured by association of devotees and doing service, not by anything else. It's impossible. Right? It cannot be done. Cannot be done. So that faith has to be there. When that faith is there, like I remember just when we were new devotees, we'd come, you know, there'd be a devotee who was there in the temple. One day they would disappear. We wouldn't see him for weeks or months. Then one day they would show up at the door again. And then it was kind of, you know, it was just like, you know, welcome back. No one even bothered to ask what happened. It was kind of like, well, where have you been? They say, ah, Maya got me. Something like that. That was it. That was the end of the conversation of that. No one asked what they did, where they went, this, that, nothing. It was just like, glad you're back, you know, and that they would slot in exactly where they left off. They would just come back in and just get into the routine, and no one bothered because no one cared. Everybody was too busy in their own devotional service. Like that. And then they just carried on. And everything went very nicely. So this has to be understood, is that this is the only way to correct things. The only way to correct any anomaly is devotional service in the association of devotees. So if we see difficulties, then we should see that we arrange for strong devotional service in the association of devotees. Then we can purify somebody. And if we're not worried about purifying, then that's Krishna's point in the end of the Bhagavad Gita. One who preaches this science to the devotees is very dear. So then these aspects should be understood. Does that make sense? You happy with that? In? Bhakti Aloka. I mean, because unless you can say exact terms, it doesn't make any sense, because the terms make some position. See, we're talking the philosophy, then you have the social, how people look at it. See, because the common person, you can't expect, common devotee, or the common person, you can't expect that they're going to think on this platform. Right? That is the point. So socially, then one may have to do so many things. But that's only because of the lack of advancement and vision on the common person's platform. Right? So when Prabhupada was here, he was pushing this upper platform of thinking. And in general, devotees would think like that and view like that. Therefore, these higher principles could be manifest. You didn't have to worry about the common thing. But we can see as time went on, then Prabhupada started talking more and more about Varnashram, because he saw that devotees just couldn't maintain that position. And they would get so much distracted by all these different things. So then they situate themselves nicely in this. It goes nicely. So socially, then it would be there. But then along with this would also be very strong points on others. Like if a sannyasi maybe fell, then maybe there would be something strictly in the social standing. But now if a girl was seen out talking with another boy, that would be it. She's history. No one would marry her. So it goes across the board. You know? That's the thing. It wasn't just focused on one or the other. We should be very careful that, you know, topically, whatever interests the common mass of devotees, whatever issue, we shouldn't then read the shastras and only take out that one point. Oh, here it says something about sannyasis. But he also, in these same books, says that someone should marry someone. If a brahmachari decides to get married, he should only marry someone from his own caste and community. So he was not into all this East meets West and rich meets poor and Brahmin meets Sudra and all this kind of stuff. So whatever was the nature, they stuck to that. Because otherwise, anytime there's a mix, it's always Shankara. It's always. But if the parents are very, very good, Shankara means mix. Like we have Varna Shankara, so you have Varna Shankara, Ashram Shankara. Varna Shankara means they claim to be one thing, but they're acting in another. Or ashram shankara means they claim to be one ashram, but they're acting in another. Like that. Shankara means mix. So basically, just what we come from is already, you know, mix. You know, we're not pure stock of anything. So then, but when you mix the natures, then you end up with different kids are mixed, and you either get something really wonderful or something really wild. Because they're always more intense because of that mix. You understand? So then, in that, there's always the chance that if the training is not very strong, you don't know which direction the child will take because they have a mixed nature. Right? If the parents are the same nature, the child is also the same nature. They won't be mixed. So it's generally very easy to train them. But if the parents are mixed, you don't know which aspect of which parent they will take under which situation. So unless one is very conscious of this, one can't see, you know, what method one will take. So he's also very strict on that point. You understand? So if we want to take these standards like this, means point is there's the philosophical point behind it. That's the ultimate point. Now, and then if we want to deal with these lower points, we can, but we can't be just pick and choose. The duck comes with a mouth and a tail. That's the thing. So we can't just choose what we want. Like, you see, no one minds varnashram. Just they don't like the front end of the duck. Right? Everyone likes to be the top of the social pile. Everyone likes to have influence. Everyone likes to have wealth. Everyone likes to have fame. Everyone likes to have freedom. Everyone likes to have all facilities. And at the same time, no responsibility. So we've just crossed all the varnas and ashrams right there. Sounds great, right? No one talks against that. But the other side of the dock, that's where devotees go, wait a minute, we can't get involved in this. This is too much. This is fanatic. But if that's fanatic, then why not we just... Then don't bother with this. But then take Prabhupada's example. Prabhupada's example was, you had a sannyasi. He may have fallen from the position, but if he's still determined that that's what he'd like to continue, it was just a trick of Maya, Prabhupada put him right back. He'd give him sannyasi again that day, that moment. And some of them, I think he did it a couple of times. But if they feel, no, I would prefer to be as a grihasta, or they saw it was too premature, or they become so attached in their relationship, then become a grihasta, but continue their preaching. They couldn't stop the preaching, couldn't stop their management, couldn't stop their leading, because these men were leaders. They had to be leaders. They could do big things. That had to go on. The ashram, it didn't matter. But if it was a matter of Maya tricked them, they would continue as sannyasis. But if they found it was either too early or they had developed attachments there, they got married. But the mission had to go on. So the point is we have to look at both ends of the duck. So in here, taking that platform of what Prabhupada was preaching there, then that's both sides. But then that means good association, support, all that has to be there. And devotees are talking about, where's the association, where's the support, where's all these things? But there it is. But we know, sannyasi falls, that's it, finished. Right? So where's the support? There isn't any. They fall. Does anyone talk about good association? No, they're just out of it. Somebody falls down, who goes and talks to them? Except for maybe an old friend. No one else. It's just they're untouchable. Then, where is the faith and devotional service? Where is the support from the community? So all the things devotees talk about we want is the very things we're not willing to give to others. So one can't get when one is not willing to give. Or one can't, one won't receive what one doesn't have. Or one can't give what one doesn't have. So the whole, it has to be seen as complete. Social system is complete. Krishna said, Om Purnam Adah Purnam Idam. What comes from Krishna is complete. So the Varnashram system is comes from Krishna, is complete. But it has to be taken as completeness. We can't just take parts we want and throw out parts we don't want. The Acharyas have already done that for us. They've already taken a complete Varnashram system on a very simple, highly elevated platform of devotional understanding and faith. And if not, then they'll give it to you on a more social, more kind of like general, you know, what they call lokika, you know? It's kind of like serious considerations of the people. That is there also, but that becomes very strict. Becomes very strict. It means that these, if we're very strict on the different positions of the varnas and ashrams, then that's there. Like, you know, they'll talk, brahmacharis, you know, they should live as brahmacharis, not be, you know, have their room and do their little cooking and have their little thing, and they're like grihasthas. At the same time, is then that also goes, grihasthas are supposed to be grihasthas, and they're supposed to be supporting the community, setting the example, they're supposed to be training and doing so many other things. So you can't have one side very weak and then complain about the other side. It's like you have to take a standard across the board. Right? You have to do it across the board. And then you have to see that it's consistent. Then you will have satisfaction. Otherwise, if there's no consistency, no one will be satisfied. No one will be satisfied. There has to be a consistency. You know, so that's there in anything. It means anybody who's expert in an activity knows that there's you do it either very simply or more complicated or very deep. Otherwise, if you do one aspect of it very deep, another very simple, another this and that, you don't get a good result. Like deity worship, you either do it all very simply or all, you know, nice standard or all very technical. But you don't do one thing very technical, another thing there's no standard, another thing like this. You have to set something, you know. So anything is like that. Any activity you want to do, it has to be balanced. So the social scene also has to be very balanced. So this is the main balancing point for devotees. Right? Devotional service must be balanced with the understanding only devotional service, that's the real thing. Everything else is only to help us advance in devotional service. So if it distracts us, then it doesn't have much use. Okay, so we'll end here. Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī Pāda kī, Śrīla Prabhu Pāda kī, Samavitā Bhaktavarinda kī, Jāya Nitya Govardhana kī.